Thank you, Paul. Hello. Yeah. Right. I'll try not to drop any papers. I'm going to start with quite a short poem called Caligo. And Caligo means darkness, and this is about that moment before. In the pre-twilight, you come close, touch the hem of the garden where the grass stands rutilant, with its fringe of Welsh gold as the sun touches the top of the fence, filters fingers of light across the wild grass and nettle to stroke your coarseness. The grey bristle that protects soft talk under feather and wards off attention turns your being into two huge watchful eyes full of night and sharp, as your beak is sharp, cracked through with brown mosaic and alert, always alert, waiting for the cover of dust. Okay, the next poem is kind of a narrative, and it's got a cliffhanger finish because it's kind of part of the longer part which I haven't finished writing yet. Okay, it's called The Hooded Children, and it's possibly set in Coventry. The Hooded Children. The rain brought out the hooded children again, taut and frayed in their grey snoods, straggling down the road, silent or arguing. Desultory, with insolent resignation, they rarely chatter. Their focus is ahead and down on the next square of grit-strewn pavement. They shrug cheap cotton around their rain-soaked shoulders, their pinched lips older than the pale cheeks and boyish frames. They have the look of the stray dogs which wander across the road and fade into the corner shadows, flanks streaked thin by the flooding rain, which continues. Each day they are thinner. I told you I had a clip. So, quite a lot of rain crept into my poetry this summer. Sorry, I've lost my lecture. So, the next poem I'm going to read is dedicated to Adrian Rich. It's actually got an epigraph from her poem Diving Into the Wreck, which really inspired this poem. And the epigram is, first the air is blue, and then. And it's called Into a Beating Heart. A poem is in the point of beginning, ending, an unfurled wrapping, revealing a time-worn jewel. First the air is blue, and then a decomposing vase of flower, a stench of perfume. Holding court with French knickers, it is bluer, and then green, and then kicking down rotted doors, wiping old men's arses, drawing invisible wire, breath tight through the imperfect apex of a beating heart, until it almost stops. Black. I'm blacking out, and yet a single drop of rust on a Mercedes Benz, where an unseen street child lit the fuse of a stolen firework, an absence badly drawn, a present barely there. My mask is powerful. Thank you. So Paul said, I was from Yorkshire, and you're not going to get away without one Yorkshire inspired poem. This is called Meadowhall. And there is a connection to Coventry, because the M1 actually ends up in Coventry, or at least halfway there. So Meadowhall. The M1 runs through Sheffield Steel. Works once open, mouths iron red and greedy, sprayed their hot spit on goggled shadow men, gouged their angry wheels across the sunspill shaded moor. The beck which cuts its chuntering coil through Sheffield, knife and mill grit, sand-washed, sooted municipality, coal-black chapels stand red-laced and flowered beneath the patron saint of newcomers, bejewelled and coppered. Meadowhall stretches out arms, touches fingers to sulphurous clouds, and sprinkles lime-washed rain spreading titian splashes across the gleam of Yorkshire shoppers' cars. Meadowhall is now shopping. Okay, so, right, and I think from there I may as well go into my, so I've got three quite short poems here. The first two are really just little verses, which were kind of inspired by a painting called The Stonecutter by Henry Wallace. And that kind of segued into a poem which I'll read afterwards. So, Stonecutter 1. Until his boots at awkward angle stand out in mud-spoiled leather. 2. At the end, a man, head bowed in fallen leaf, early morning suncast light on a distant pool. And the next poem is called Father. His leather jerkin, battered ochre, stained with work, trousered with holes, no patches, rough brown forearms, Xmas battered, thinly emerge out of rolled over viola squares, fist clenched gently, the wooden fork handle, sifting grubbed up gransel off thick chunked, turned over soil, coughs, leaning now, hunch-shouldered, smiles. My poetry actually is inspired by the natural world, really. Before I move on to that kind, and that was really inspired by my father. I used to go for very long walks with my father into the moors, and the moors are kind of mixed into my blood somewhere. But before I read that, I'm going to read you a poem which I wrote for International Women's Day, actually, but it kind of goes back to when I was a teenager. It's called Flares. In 74, we split our cords to the knee, inserted extra flare. Mine were harlequin, black and purple, one pair sacrificed for the other. In 77, we went pipe thin and sewed up our seams to match the spare music. Raw at the edges, bleeding through rips in our vests. Our jeans reclaimed the night, tracing our right to walk with candle flame, asked why you dared to presume. Sewing our voices to barbed wire and affinities, stamping on toys from the boys. In 81 we twisted cruise missiles in our hair, ribbons and boots to our feet, embroidered our breath with our friends. Owl-shaped, brown, black, against blue, fading sky, still, and you screech, and I stand stock, take stock, still, and I hear you still again in the green, black, 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 fur, and you screech, and I stand, and you screech, and you fly. So the next poem is kind of about the sea, the Pacific, which is the title, and it's kind of a love poem, I suppose. It's in three parts. Pacific, one. Sorry. One. Today I saw the willow tree, branches written in your hair. Today I saw the sea painted in your tears. Today I saw sandy reaches in your skin, sable tone. A smooth gradation from white to brown, close up resolved to multifarious speckle. Tiny jewel glistenings dissolving like the pores in your limbs to meaningless pixelation. An overblown portrait obsessively enlarged. Two. Today, thin black wooden posts stapling together your body, your bones, the beach drifted logs tumbled together, jointed loosely by frayed plastic rope, blue sky hazed white by sunlight, your hands by bent rusty wire, twisted in grotesque shape, beside dried out bladder rack crackled and almost black. Flotsam and jetsam, debris of the magnificent Pacific, dazzling. Three. Today, the sand grip reddened my eyes, and the raven's croak confused me. The coastal tang of your skin once again, the wind whipping your hair, raising the swell of the waves. White spray drenching everything. The rhythmic tail thud, the steady, breathy blow of the grey humpback nearby. And far from sight, white against a white sky, a crane unfolded herself above a distant tree line. Her eyes, clean glass floats, rough netted balls, tumbled across the water through Kuroshio and Oyashio to North Pacific drift, landing on Alaskan shores, ocean green tinged, depthless. Is actually published in an anthology, the Hippocrates Poetry Medicine, anthology, and that is the only anthology I've been published in that comes with a glossary, and I managed to make three entries. So I'll just give you a couple of definitions. Hydrocephalus means water on the brain, and it's generally lethal. Strabismic means squinting, and I'll leave you to guess the other one. It's called stillbirth. Sullen with dust and sharp shadow, cast behind the brown panelled door, the hydrocephalus stands alone. On three shelves of dark stained wood, translucent dolphin brain, atrophic limb, looking down with strabismic eyes to a scuffed parquet floor. Thick layered, a fade red curtain conceals the cyclops, blunt-nosed, pale, barely bodied, spiralling into knotty white umbilical, cut off from the womb's blood red, amnion exchanged for formaldehyde, rests on crushed velvet, which soft tissue once fed the dividing cell, ghost imprint of promise, ending in a once painted room, under glass encrypted in ochre-blenched ink. The next poem is called Egg. For a long time, you were in a dark place, a deep sea cave, finding your colours by reflecting the moon. You ate its refulgent light to a sliver of yellowed ore. You grew eye green, flecked hazel, a speck once. You fit now between my thumb and two forefingers, hemmed in and ripening, fed by the damp and crushing rock. A semi-precious ice, cold touch, agate, you push out and ate the stone in willful spikes, become a green hedgehog, gnawing softly and secretly on the crumbling stone, stretching your arms into the soft boulder, fitting your shape to its weaknesses, chalcedony, fed by the booming crash of sea waves, your gentle crackle when the wind's sigh pours, jasper, at high tide when the surf waves fizzed and stopped one moment before they smash, shaking out their seaweed hair, soaking the rocks, running fingers into the caves, pulling out pebble, salt water in your growing as you became. What did you touch to make you so cold? The two of you singing an ancient chorus laugh. You sigh a moment, the singing stops, starts, and you sing an ancient chorus laughs. You cry with trembling wild bird song. A silence starts, stops. A clamour wipes a knife blade through a note, winds a groan pain into its song, whispers a space. You sing, they sing, stop, shout, take the knife out, put it back again, put it back, sing, silence. Thank you.